Jerry would be invited to my studio just to look at my new work, because she has this eye for art, but she also has a psychologist viewpoint, and she would see things that many times I didn't see, which I thought was good. And then one day we met to have coffee and sat down and chatted, and then I invited her out to the studio, and she brought some of her poetry with, which is the first time that I got to hear that, and that's probably 3 years ago at least. So we would do this quite regularly, and then one day we got the idea that we'd like to share this with other folks. And at first we thought, what ways can we share it? We didn't think of doing a book. We thought about making prints of the artwork and prints of the poetry and put them in boxes, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we did.
Designing.
We had some kind of zany ideas.
We were going to supply white gloves with each box.
I love it.
Which we never got around to. And then one day we thought, we want this to be a work of art. We don't want it to be just another thing that everybody else has done. How do we combine these two things? And the book idea that lays flat on your lap and allows you to look at the poetry and read it, and then to look at the art. And it's very important to know the two aren't deliberately planned to go together. In fact, we did them independently of each other. And we're
kind of
quite surprised.
Kind of reminds me of our conversations sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you'll say what you have to say, and then, like, I'll just come barreling in with what I have to say. And sometimes they really don't. But it's always fun to have this exchange of ideas. He'll say something that sparks something in my mind, and then I share it, and we'll share it back and forth. So, yeah.
Marley Call and Jerry Willimek have been friends for decades. Marley is a retired art professor and professional painter. Jerry is a clinical social worker, and she's also a monk and a philosopher. And both are parents, spouses, and grandparents. Their longtime friendship has now led to a book called We Sit. 20 of Jerry's poems and 20 of Marley's paintings. Each flip of the page presents one of Marley's paintings on the left-hand side and one of Jerry's poems on the right-hand side. The book is a work of art and a work of meditation. I read pieces today that I had read Friday and sat with them in a different way today than I did on Friday.
That's very good.
Yeah.
So
that is good. Art will reveal different things depending on who we are when we sit down to look at it. Marley and I have actually benefited by reading our book. We look at it and we do the same thing. We just the other day he said, well, I've just read a couple more of the poems, and he said, I saw things that I never thought about before, or I, you know, thought about some things that I hadn't thought about before when I read the poems in the past. And I've been doing the same things with the paintings and just really bringing myself just time and time again. There were only 20 paintings here and only 20 poems. And so it's an invitation to repeat, to come in, spend time, and come again and spend time, and each time something new is possible, depending on who we are when we sit down.
Mm-hmm. Buddhism and meditation both seem to be fairly central in your lives, and I was wondering if you could talk about your relationship with that.
When I was in graduate school in the 1970s, early 70s, I came across Alan Watts, who was sort of my introduction to Buddhism. And it was the time of when I was a hippie.
Yeah, and this is in Oregon?
This is at the University of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I read all his books and gained a great amount from them. It tuned me in a different way. And also, I do remember he taught us how to live by taking the doors off our cupboards so we could see our food, and to wear loose clothing, which we all did at that time anyhow.
Fascinating.
That's where I first became acquainted with Buddhism, other than perhaps hearing about it in college and high school, but never investigating it. It has been part of my lifestyle, part of my thinking, not as consciously as it has been the last few years.
Okay. How did you bring it into your life now more regularly?
Well, Jerry, many years ago, said that my paintings were meditative in that they are one stroke at a time, and they're done relatively slow, and one stroke depends on the previous stroke. And so you do a lot of lining up and thinking and being very conscious about where the stroke goes. But my mind moves in various directions. I don't just think about paint. Some of my subjects are those things that I see every day or that are around me. And I think about those, or I be looking at those. And sometimes my mind will wander off into past memories of the farm or something else that is triggered.
You know, as Marley and I start talking about meditation back and forth, as he describes painting, I almost think about the strokes in his paintings, which are small, focused, individually laid down strokes, very carefully, mindfully laid down, as something like the breath in meditation, which is an anchor that then allows the bigger mind to be experienced. So you talk about the bigger mind. You have the strokes. For me, in meditation, it's the breath, mm-hmm. which is that repetitive, moment-by-moment gesture. And with that as a home base, then the bigger mind and the bigger body can be explored more freely, I think, when we have an anchor.
Well, how would you describe your work?
I should say we don't have visuals here.
Right.
However, it's radio, and my paintings are relatively small. They're 12 by 12 inches. Two things, perhaps, to start with. When you look at them from a distance, you'll get a sense of the design and the whole of the piece. But as you get closer, you begin to see the separate components, and then finally the strokes, which becomes much more interesting sometimes. But working small, they're not done all in one sitting. In other words, some of these take considerable amount of time. And so I have to bring my mind and my head and my hand together. I never walk into the studio and just start laying strokes. I lay strokes, but not on the painting, to get the rhythm. And then my mind has to come back to where I think it was when I left the painting the day before, which is not always easy. And sometimes it's triggered by music or the light or something else to get me back in that frame of mind.
And you're working with this egg, tempera?
It's tempera, yes. Yeah. And it's basically yolk of the egg, powdered pigment, and water. It was a predecessor to oil paint. It goes back to the 14th century, where it's most famous.
Your work is like your own language. When did you find your language with your style?
That's a struggle, because when I started, I didn't know how to paint. Most people don't. And so I didn't learn how to paint until I started looking closely at paintings in museums. I could realize how the paint could look. And then I remember in grad school one day, a very well-known artist who was visiting came in to give me a critique. And he said, "It looks like you're farming with color." Well, I'm a farm boy, and it made total sense to me. And they were all about grids and lines and so forth, very abstract. Ever since then, I realized that it was the land that was telling me what subjects I should choose. Not literally, but that I could play with ideas of growth and seeds and gardening and all these wonderful things.
Your work, it's perfectly symmetrically asymmetrical or something. There's this perfect balance in weight and color and subject. They're perfectly balanced, but it's never a mirror image side by side.
This has been deliberate for the past, for this series of 20 paintings, but also a bit before, where I decided deliberately to use bilateral symmetry. And so the first thing I would do would be to split the canvas or panel in half. And I think I was trying to find balance in my own life, perhaps. How do I weigh this against this? I had a medical diagnosis that threw me for a loop. And I was trying to deal with that, and I was trying to deal with painting. And I think the two eventually helped me balance that out.
That's painter Marley Call. He and poet Jerry Willimek have created a book of art, a combination of Marley's paintings and Jerry's poems. It's called We Sit.
We've been kind of working together in conversation for a long, long time. Enjoyed visiting about art and life and what life throws at you and how art helps us express what our human experience is. My practice has been to be writing, and writing is has been kind of a private, personal way of processing my life. And, you know, you have to really look at the big picture, but 20 years ago, I had a medical diagnosis. I had a diagnosis of cancer, and it threw me for a loop. And so at that time, that was just part of when Marley and I would visit, there was this conundrum that I was trying to figure out. How do I keep living wholeheartedly knowing that I'm going to die? It was really hard. And I think one time in your studio, I said to you, I think my whole job right now is to learn how to not be afraid of dying. So fast forward up to the last 3 or 4 years, it's been part of our rapport to talk about this sort of, well, this really basic issue, facing mortality, facing impermanence. It's kind of like the bottom line, really, of Buddhism, which is that everything changes. And that a lot of our suffering comes from expectations that the expectations that we create about our lives, that we become very disappointed and upset when it doesn't turn out the way we wanted it. So letting go of those rigid expectations we have for our lives and recognizing that everything is changing, everything is really in a state of impermanence, in a state of flux, including ourselves, including our own bodies, including our own being. And so working with that was really part of my healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been able to discuss that with Marley in the presence of art through sharing poetry. You know, it's been all part of a healing process. So we're sort of both in a kind of a healing process.
Your poems, do they come from a meditation, or are you hit with an inspiration and jot something down in the middle of the day?
That's pretty interesting. There's a way of observing life that comes from practicing meditation. And it's observing life in a way that steps back from judgment and allows just an immersion in experience as it's happening. And because I've become more accustomed to really monitoring and being aware of my physical and mental process moment to moment, I stumble across these points, and I think I write when I come to a conundrum, to something that's really hard to resolve, really hard to be comfortable with. It's like those are those conundrums. How do I move forward? I need to decide what to do next, or what is this sensation that I'm experiencing? I ask a lot of questions, but they aren't the why question. They're how, what next, where? I'll examine my experience with those kinds of questions. And the poems seem to rise out of those things. I did create most of the poems in the last couple of years, but there are a couple that are older as well. Even the poem that I started the book with, that was the first poem in the book, is probably the oldest poem, and it comes from maybe 10 years ago.
That's such a great poem.
It refers to a long time ago, so yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's a respect also that I've learned for the limitation of words. And so while I'm using words, I'm also aware that words kind of take you only so far. They like take you right to the edge of the part that you can't find words for. And so there's a boiled down quality to the poems. And also there's I think probably in most of them, there's a sense of more than where you're left at the end of the poem. It's like, and sometimes it's funny. I mean, some of the poems are kind of funny, I think.
I hope people
will sort of be amused sometimes, because that's another part of, it's an important part of life, is to be seeing the humor and seeing the irony in things, and finding it delightful rather than just being afraid all the time.
There is a process to putting a book together, and I know you're both very thoughtful people. How did you decide which poem would be aligned with which picture?
We didn't.
You didn't?
No, I picked out the first image for the book and the last image, and Jerry picked out a first poem and a last poem. And our designer, he worked with poems as shapes. If you look at them, they're not in rectangles necessarily. They're in shapes. And he tried to blend the shape of the poem with something he saw in the painting.
I love knowing that. Now I can look at the book in a whole other way.
And it was kind of fun, really, to say, okay, whoa, what happens when this sits next to this? It was kind of like what happens when we sit down to have a conversation and we're just sitting here and where do we start and how do we play off of each other in conversation?
Jerry did the cover. She did the title of the book, We Sit. And we had no idea how our designer would arrange that. And I had the chance to pick out the colors. And so I did lots of research. And the cover itself is, as I told Jerry yesterday, I saw the Dalai Lama wearing this color. He's a Tibetan. And he was also wearing the same orange around his shoulders. And the green was on the temple. And there it was. It was that simple.
So you can count on, those of you who aren't seeing the book, you can count on kind of a wild color experience when you when you just walk up to the book and hold it from the outside, its appearance on the outside, but then it also is quite colorful on the inside as well.
Would you want to grab a two-page section and you could talk about the painting and you could read the poem?
Yeah, which one do you want to do, Marley?
I want to do Persistent on page.
And Marley, did you already name your you named your pieces before they were sent off?
Yes, one word titles, which was hard for me. The painting started out like this. We had arrived home late in the evening from a trip out west. It was snow on the ground. We trudged into the house, got the house warm. It was getting late, had something to eat, went to bed. Woke up the next morning to our first cup of coffee, looking out our big window at the beauty out in our yard. And we're interrupted by a flock of crows, maybe 60, flying over our house, squawking like mad. We thought, what are they doing? This is very unusual. About 10 minutes later, Sandy went to check something in the kitchen, looked out the window, and there had been a deer kill while we were sleeping. But it was filled with birds who were selecting their favorite piece of the deer. And we noticed, we left it, we watched them all day, and then that evening, we noticed that the deer had been moved about 20 feet up into the sumac. So the animals that killed it were still around. So that idea, if I could show you the painting, is made up of lots of rhythms. There's a bird-like form, and then the rhythms of the ribs of the deer, which I could see, which became the rhythms of not only the deer, but also became the trees and the earth itself. That's how that painting came about, that experience. And then I tried to put it in some kind of meaningful order.
I want to say that word, persistent, Marley taught me something very interesting, and he's taught me a lot of really interesting things. But one was this idea that making art is a matter of persistence, that it's something you do every day. It's a gentle persistence that is integrated into your life. It isn't thought of as a project. It's something you bring your whole self to every day you go to work. And this is what you've done, you know, for decades and decades, is you go to work every day and you come to the studio and you meet up with the materials and you meet up with the work that you did yesterday. Before you know it, as you've said before, Marley, you know, you have a body of work. But it doesn't happen unless you are persistent. So the poem that sits next to this painting, Persistent, know this broken heart in its full splendor. know this dark ache as an echo in flesh from some broken part that must be seen with wide eyes and in all honesty held.
There it sits.
There it sits.
Can you talk about that poem?
First of all, I think to be human fully, we have to let our hearts be broken and not try to fix it. This poem came from a moment of brokenheartedness that I experienced. So much wanting not to feel it, and then realizing that all I needed was to have my broken heart seen and not fixed. And I wrote the poem as a way of exposing my broken heart, almost giving permission to look with wide eyes and in all honesty hold what's seen. It's a broken heart. And that in itself is so sufficient that any gesture to try to fix it is almost destructive. Just to see and be seen and to know is enough.
That's Jerry Willimek. Her poems can be found alongside Marley Call's artwork in their book, We Sit. We Sit can be found at the McCroskey Art Center in Grand Rapids, the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji, and online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'm Katie Carter. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the people of Minnesota.
Well, as a child, I mostly spoke inside my head. I had conversations with the clouds, the dogs, the dead. And they thought me...